Welcome back to our second part, fascinating interview with Shraddha Sharma of Your Story. And Shraddha has been telling us some interesting statistics around the Indian venture and startup market. Your story has detailed, I actually misspoke in part one, I believe, Shraddha. I said you had chronicled 40,000 startups, and you corrected me by saying 80,000 startups. I mean, wow, that's a big number. And again, it just gives us a sense of the scale in India itself. You know, one aspect of India that does prevent or slow down foreign investors making investments in India is just the bureaucracy and regulatory layers that one, you know, perceives when you look into India. What's your view on that as far as its effect on the startup community? Is it hurting? Is it beneficial? Just love to know how some of your startup companies see their way through the bureaucratic mire that we perceive in India.
So, you know, very observant of you, Gregory, because this has been one of the Achilles' heels, if I may say so, for India. But this government, the current government, which came to power in 2014, has the sole focus of this government has been to make it easy, cut down on bureaucracy and all the regulatory hurdles. So if you see in 2018 or 19, India gained significant position. We are now 70, our ranking is 77 out of 190 countries in World Bank's ease of doing business. So that's a significant jump that India, and according to the 2019 study, we were the biggest improvers in the numbers. So that speaks of the work that has happened in the last 2-3 years. And to me, being on the ground, I can see that change, right? Like in the last 10 years, a lot of change has happened, but more so in the last 3-4 years. So one is the, you know, there are less of paperwork. And one of the good things about the demonetization and the GST implementation, which was big news globally, India making all these changes, is, you know, a lot of transparency has come in the system because now everything is happening digitally. So one of the biggest campaign the government of India did was Digital India, which was like, hey, because when you are not digital, there's a lot of loopholes, red tapism. But now the country and the government have, you know, ensure that everyone is transacting digitally. And that's why, to answer your first question, fintech becomes even more significant. That's why so many startups are getting funded, because there's a huge opportunity that has come up with Aadhaar. I don't know if you know about Aadhaar. Aadhaar is the biggest social security platform, the social you know, getting everyone an Aadhaar number, Aadhaar verification. All of us have had social identification, which was not there in the country. So today, 1.3 billion, sorry, I didn't, it's not social security, it's social, because social security in US is different. So it's social identification. So for the first time, there is a unique identity for all of us, which is there online. Now that makes the country completely different from what it was even 3-4 years back, because everything is online, everything is out there, and it has saved, you know, 90,000 crores, which would be around how many, much of, you know, around, I would say, around 10 billion to 10 to 15 billion dollars for the government, because a lot of, you know, things were getting, taxations were being avoided. Now, those things are not possible. And so to me, it's that's why India becomes very interesting now, which I wouldn't have said even like 3-4 years back.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Let me dissect that a little bit for our listeners, because that is hugely important. So there's a few keywords I'm going to throw out, Sharma, and perhaps you can just comment on them. First of all, we all know India, I believe, is the largest democracy in the world. Yes. And a democracy, by its definition, actually serves to protect the individual to a degree. Contrast that with maybe a Chinese form of government which doesn't have personal protection. So that's an issue which is promising. So, you know, when somebody hears about a central registry for identification, one immediately considers the personal impact to personal identity. But we should state that India is a democracy, and I assume there is some personal protections involved there. And I'll let you comment in one second. But the second thing, what you're describing to me, I keep having the word blockchain just going through my mind, because it seems to me like that is somewhat of a perfect application for a blockchain application.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And you know, because everyone has an encrypted identity today, and it's highly secured digital identification, which has been created for every Indian, and the government has spent a lot to do that. And that brings, that changes the whole dynamics of doing business. And you're right, we are the largest democracy. It's a welfare state. Our country has, you know, the government has been always looking at the welfare, because there are a lot of people who have to come, you know, we're growing fast, but we have to inclusive growth. And now with this system, one, it brings complete transparency, it makes it easy to do business, and it completely curtails red tapism and different leakages which were happening in the economy.
Yeah.
And frauds are absolutely, if I may say so, in the last 3 years, I don't think so globally there has, you know, anyone would have heard of any kind of fraud or, you know, money laundering, because those things have been, you know, these provisions have ensured that the economy, the country is transparent. And I think that's what is reflecting in all these World Bank ratings, which India is gaining on.
Yeah. Well, they say sunlight is the best antiseptic, and that's certainly the case here. So very promising developments there. You know, some of the articles that I came across on your story, very, very interesting statistics around different parts of the VC market. We spoke a little bit about banking. Let's speak a little bit about lending. As you know, there has been somewhat of a private credit boom, certainly in the United States, but probably globally, driven in by two parts, I would say. One part is just a hunger for yield-orientated paper from investors. So investors, you know, willing to take a bit of illiquidity to generate some yields, because government bonds have not been yielding all that much. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing, I think, is the technology lending itself to credit models, assessing credit ratings, and you know, basically allowing investors to privately lend through crowd lending type platforms. So talk to us a little bit about the lending movement in India. I assume it's massive. I know it's massive. And, you know, where's it going, and what is your views on that side of the market?
So I'm assuming, Gregory, you're here asking about the lending I'm seeing in the startup space.
I mean like private lending, the ability. Yes. So lending in the startup space, but also kind of crowd lending type platforms that you're seeing.
Yeah. So do you know the 50% of fintech equity funding in 2000.
I'm sorry, Sharma, could you just speak a bit louder? It's a bit faint.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
So lending has been, you know, one of the key ways of raising funding for startups in the last 2 years. And we are seeing a lot of lending platforms coming up, and venture debt has become big here in India. So that is one. And then the second part to this is lending startups in the lending space. You know, so in fact, half of the funds that were raised, the equity funds invested in India were in fintechs, were going to these lending startups. So there were a lot of lending startups who raised equity here, because there is, you know, we are seeing that because there are so many people who are unbanked, the lending will be a big stay in this country, a huge, huge play. A lot of NBFCs have come up, and a lot of people are setting up NBFCs, and they're getting huge capital. In fact, government is also supporting, because there's different sectors, right? Students lending, SMEs. And MSMEs leading lending. Until now, the lending was only done by few banks, right? And and only if you just see, if we have 1.3 billion, only 7 to 8% of India's population has access to formal credit, mm-hmm. right? So the rest of the population does not have access to formal credit. And that was leading to a lot of, you know, people being under debt and these private transactions happening. But they are institutions, they are startups, they are NBFCs, which are actively investing and, you know, lending, giving lending to these communities. And it's growing. And if you ask any investor here in India, they're absolutely bullish about this space. All the top investors, VCs, they're quite bullish because there is margins are very healthy in lending here in the country. And see, all circle backs, right? Like now with the digital India, with the Aadhaar social identity. So the repays and all, which would have been a challenge, is not such a challenge anymore.
Yeah. Well, India is an incredibly entrepreneurial society, as you've chronicled, and I think it's been the absence of capital which has, you know, prevented the entrepreneurial spirit from really blossoming, and so that's being addressed, and that's wonderful to hear. Another area that you've detailed quite a lot, from what I could see from your story, is the insurtech space. So that's kind of interesting as well. Maybe give us a little bit of a synopsis of that event-based insurance, AI, artificial intelligence, and also blockchain seem to be features in the insurtech space.
Yeah, so, you know, 2018, insurtech startups almost raised $334 million compared to $13 million in 2017. So that's a huge significant jump. So that clearly says that there is, you know, investors and startups are seeing huge opportunity over there, and major players like, you know, some of the companies which people could Google later or read on your story are CoverFox, Digit Insurance, ACO, ACK, and the largest single contributor in the space has been Policy Bazaar, which raised $200 million from SoftBank. And investors are looking to finance early stage innovative insurance startups. So if you talk to investors here, they are scouting for interesting opportunities here. So, and AI based hedge funds are the areas where we expect growth and opportunities. And blockchain, as you rightly said, is, you know, if you talk to investors here, they feel that blockchain will have a significant impact on insurtech market. So yeah, but to answer your question, $334 million invested in 2018, and we hope that this year the number will be, if not double, significantly higher than last year.
Right. Yeah, given the opportunity, that actually sounds like quite a small amount invested. So hopefully that sees some growth as well. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to catch up on Flipkart and how that's going for Walmart. And I'm going to ask Sharma the wildest story that she's chronicled at your story. So bear with us, and we'll be back shortly for part 3.